In Genesis chapter 49, we're nearing the end of the book of Genesis. We're also nearing the end, the section of the book of Genesis known as the Joseph story. And if you haven't read the Joseph story in a while, you really ought to go back and read it. It is a rip-roaring good story. And near the end of the Joseph story, in Genesis 49, Jacob, the patriarch, who has 12 sons, he gathers his sons around him, and this old man, he prophesies over them and tells them what is in store for their particular branches of his family tree. And it's a series of blessings and curses. To the first three sons, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, he gives bad news. Things are not going to go well for their particular tribes. But it's the fourth son, Judah, who receives the first bit of good news about the destiny of the tribe that will bear his name. And this is what Jacob says to his son Judah, beginning in verse 8. Judah, Judah, your brothers will praise you. Your hand will be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons will bow down to you. You are a lion's cub. You return from the prey, my son. Like a lion, he crouches and lies down. Like a lioness, who dares to rouse him? The scepter, sign of royalty, will not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until he to whom it belongs shall come, and the obedience of the nations shall be his. Jacob says to his son Judah, you are going to be the father of a tribe that will have a royal line. You are going to be the father of kings. And if you keep reading through the Old Testament, you will see that Judah's tribe brings into the world King David and his descendants. And it seems fitting that this would be the blessing for Judah, because throughout the Joseph story, Judah has emerged as the leader of his brothers. Even though he's not the firstborn, he's the fourthborn son. And you see him exercise his influence throughout the story, sometimes in positive, but also in negative ways. If you go back to the beginning of the Joseph story in Genesis chapter 37, the first time we hear Judah speak, the first thing he says, he intervenes and saves his little brother Joseph's life. The other brothers, they want to kill Joseph because they're jealous, because Joseph is Jacob's favorite son, and they're tired of it and they want to get rid of him, and they throw him in a cistern, and then they're trying to decide what they want to do with him and how they're going to dispose of him. And Judah says, let's not kill our own brother. Let's sell him into slavery. Let's get rid of him that way. We'll never see him again. And then let's deceive our father into believing that his favorite son is dead. Our first impression of Judah in the Joseph story is that he is not a very good man. But then again, neither are any of his brothers who go along with his plan. Years pass, and Joseph ends up first in slavery, then in prison, and then elevated to power in Egypt. And a famine strikes the land. And Jacob sends his sons to Egypt to buy grain, because under Joseph's leadership, Egypt is prepared for the famine. And when his brothers show up in Egypt and they begin to deal with this Egyptian official, it's Joseph, and they don't recognize him. Joseph recognizes them, but they don't recognize him. And he makes things very hard on his brothers who sold him into slavery. They leave Egypt with bags full of grain, but they also leave one of their brothers back in Egypt in prison. More time passes. They run out of grain, and Jacob decides to send his sons back to Egypt again. But this time his sons tell him, the Egyptian we've been dealing with, he told us, don't come back for more grain unless you bring your youngest son, Benjamin, who is Joseph's little brother. He said, don't even bother coming back if you don't bring all the sons this time. And Jacob says, absolutely not. I will not send my youngest and now my new favorite son to Egypt with you all. And that's when Judah steps up and speaks up in chapter 43. And this is what he says to his father. Send the boy along with me, and we will go at once so that we and you and our children may live and not die. I myself will guarantee his safety. You can hold me personally responsible for him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him here before you, I will bear the blame before you all my life. Finally, Jacob gives in. They have to have the grain. And he sends Benjamin to Egypt with his brothers. And once there, Joseph, they still don't recognize him, Joseph continues to test his brothers to see, have you changed at all over the years? And the way he does it this time is he tells them, yes, you can go home with grain, but this time you have to leave Benjamin behind in Egypt. Their worst nightmare, Jacob's worst nightmare, is coming true. And once again, it's Judah who steps up as the leader of his family and says this to Joseph. So, now, if the boy, speaking of Benjamin, is not with us, when I go back to your servant, my father, Jacob, and if my father, whose life is closely bound up with the boy's life, sees that the boy isn't there, he will die. Your servants will bring the gray head of our father down to the grave in sorrow. Your servant guaranteed the boy's safety to my father. I said, if I do not bring him back to you, I will bear the blame before you, my father, all my life. And so Judah says, now then, please, please let your servant remain here as my Lord's slave in place of the boy. And let the boy return with his brothers. How can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? No, do not let me see the misery that would come on my father. Judah's speech, rather, convinces Joseph that his brothers have changed. And he reveals himself to them. And there's this great reunion scene. And then Joseph says, go back and get my father and the rest of the family, and you all come here and move to Egypt and stay with me. We have plenty of grain, and you will survive this famine. Now, the Judah we see giving that final speech, where he offers himself up in place of Benjamin, let me be the slave, not him, in order to prevent his father suffering another heartbreak of losing a cherished child. That's a much different version of the Judah we see early on in the Joseph story, when he's selling his brother into slavery and then participating in a ruse to convince his father that his favorite son has been devoured violently by a wild animal. And the question, as we track Judah's transformation through the story, is what happened to bring about this change? And the answer is that Tamar happened to Judah. And we find her story back in Genesis chapter 38. At the very end of chapter 37, Joseph is been sold into slavery. He's in Egypt, and now he's in Potiphar's household. We know what happens after that. Jacob is inconsolable, grieving the loss of his favorite son. And so then chapter 38 begins, and it seems to go in a completely different direction. Here are the first few verses. At that time, Joseph is in Egypt, Jacob is in grief. At that time, Judah left his brothers and went down to stay with a man of Adullam named Hirah. There, Judah met the daughter of a Canaanite man named Shua. He married her and made love to her. She became pregnant and gave birth to a son who was named Ur. She conceived again and gave birth to a son and named him Onan. She gave birth to still another son and named him Shelah. So Judah, he leaves behind his father and he leaves behind his brother, perhaps to run away from what he has done to his family. And he goes down to where the Canaanites live, and there he marries a Canaanite woman. This is one more sign that Judah has no regard for his father Jacob or his family or the ways and traditions of his family. And once he marries this Canaanite woman, he quickly has three sons, and they grow up, and time is passing, and Judah marries his oldest son off to a young Canaanite woman named Tamar. But his oldest son dies before he can father a son with Tamar. An ancient custom dictated that when something like that happened, Judah's second son, Onan, has to step in and father a son with Tamar to preserve the older son's name and his lineage. But Onan doesn't want to have anything to do with that practice. And he too dies before he can father a son with Tamar. So now Judah's lost his first two sons. And he sends Tamar back to live in her father's household. And Shelah seems as still a boy or still growing up. And he says, live with your father, and when Shelah is of age, I will send him to you. But Judah has no intention of giving his third son to Tamar, whom he believes is a black widow and is somehow responsible for the death of his first two sons. Withholding Shelah from Tamar, though, is a major breach of ancient marriage customs, which will later be codified into law in Deuteronomy 25. Super important tradition and custom. Judah sets it aside, and when he does, he pronounces a slow-moving death sentence on Tamar. She will live in her father's household, but once her father dies, she will be left a childless widow in a male-dominated society. It's one of the most vulnerable positions for a woman in the ancient world. Once Tamar realizes what Judah has done to her, Shelah comes of age and Judah withholds him. Once she realizes what her father-in-law has done to her, the story takes a spicy turn. Maybe we might even better call it scandalous turn. Yeah, that's it. It's a scandal. Because Judah's wife dies. And after he grieves her death, he goes on a trip to a nearby village. And word comes to Tamar that her father-in-law is on the move. And so what she does is take off her grieving clothes and instead dresses up and disguises herself as a prostitute and then sits by the side of the road and waits for Judah to come along. Now, believe it or not, this story does not show up in children's Bible class curriculum. I don't know why. Judah comes along and sees this prostitute by the side of the road, and he doesn't recognize her as Tamar, his daughter-in-law. And they begin a negotiation. And they finally settle on a price. He will later deliver or have delivered a young goat to her. But Tamar insists that as a pledge of security for that promised payment, he must leave with her his seal and its cord and his staff. Three items that would be unique to Judah. It'd be the equivalent of leaving behind your driver's license today. She says, I'll take the goat, but you got to give me your driver's license until you bring it. And they agree. And Judah sleeps with his daughter-in-law, Tamar, not knowing who she is. And she becomes pregnant. Judah goes on his way, and then later he sends a friend with a young goat to make payment to pick up his driver's license. But his friend shows up, and he starts looking for the prostitute who works by the side of the road, and all the locals say, we know of no such woman. And so his friend goes back to Judah and says, I couldn't find her, and nobody knows who or where she is. And Judah is wise enough to know not to make a big deal out of a potentially embarrassing situation. I mean, if this were to hit social media, it would blow up. And so he says, you know what, just forget about it. Let her keep my things. I tried to do what was right. I tried to pay her, but I did the best I can do. 3 months later, word comes to Judah that Tamar is guilty of prostitution, and she is pregnant. And Judah sees an opportunity to finally get rid of her once and for all. And he says, have her brought out and burned to death. Judah is really not a very nice man, is he? As they're bringing Tamar out to burn her, she sends Judah a message. And it is a Jerry Springer moment. She produces the seal and the cord and the staff, and she says, does anybody here recognize these? They belong to my baby daddy. And this is how Judah responds. Verse 26, Judah recognized them and said, she's more righteous than I. Since I wouldn't give her to my son Shelah, and Judah did not sleep with her again. It is an amazing admission from a man caught in a moment of public humiliation. She's more righteous than I am. This man who deceived his father has now been deceived. This man who sold his little brother into slavery has been bested by the woman he tried to put away. This man who has done so much wrong is being held accountable by a woman who refuses to be treated unjustly. She is more righteous than I. I'm in the wrong here. And the next time we see Judah in the Joseph story, he's a different man. He's a better man. And the only explanation in the story for his transformation is that Tamar courageously forced him to look in the mirror and do right by her. Because in the ancient world, according to that ancient marriage custom, Judah owed Tamar a son. And when he refused to give her what he owed her, she took one from him. Actually, she took two from him because she gives birth to twins, Perez and Zerah. Now, clearly, the moral of this story is not go and do likewise. Not a lot of examples to follow here in this story. No, instead, this is a strange, shocking story set in an ancient world with really strange and weird marriage customs that offend and scandalize our modern Christian sensibilities. And some of you probably didn't even know this story was in the Bible. And you're still not sure. You're going to have to go home and read Genesis 38. Was he telling the truth? Actually, I softened it. It's worse in the Bible. And while this story does not show up in our children's Bible classes, and for good reason, it does show up in the genealogy of Jesus in Matthew chapter 1, which is why we're talking about it today. When Tamar confronts Judah with his sin and with his hypocrisy, she not only brings about his character transformation, she also, God uses her to also, even though he doesn't deserve it, give Judah the honor of fathering a tribe that will be forever linked with King Jesus. We don't see anything else of Tamar after this story. She doesn't appear again in Genesis. She plays this critical role, and then the story moves on without her. We're back to Joseph in Egypt. And she doesn't show up again in the Bible. She isn't mentioned again in the Bible until we get to the story, believe it or not, of Ruth and Boaz, which we explored last week. So when Ruth and Boaz get together and the citizens of Bethlehem are celebrating their relationship, they bless Ruth and Boaz, and they say to Boaz in chapter 4, verse 12, through the offspring the Lord gives you by this young woman, speaking to Boaz, may your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah. Now, if you're Ruth and Boaz, do you really want your relationship compared to Judah and Tamar? And why? What is it in Ruth and Boaz's relationship that would make the citizens of Bethlehem think of Judah and Tamar? I can't speak for those ancient citizens, but one of the connections I see in these stories with thousands of years of hindsight is that in both the stories of Ruth and Tamar, I see two strong women who take the initiative in a male-dominated society and write themselves into God's story by refusing to sit back passively and wait for men to decide their fate. And God honors them for their boldness and their courage by including them and their offspring in Jesus' family tree. It also seems that God uses Tamar's story to give a preview of one of the major themes of the Joseph story, which Joseph articulates in Genesis chapter 50. After he gets back together with his brothers and they're reflecting on how all of this is working out, this is what Joseph says. Chapter 50, verse 20. He says, "You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives." Joseph's brothers intended to harm him. They intended evil against him, and God used it to save many lives. Judah intended to harm Tamar. He was doing evil against her, and God used her response to save the world. Because it's because of Tamar's story, at least in part, buried deep within the roots of the Jesus story, that when Christ is described in the New Testament in Revelation 5, this is what it says. The lion of the tribe of Judah, the root of David, who has triumphed. This morning, let us stand in awe and wonder of God's amazing ability to use all kinds of people and their crazy stories to not only bless the world, but triumph over the forces of evil through the lion of, yes, Judah. Let's stand and sing.